I always make the jokes like as the, my husband stopped loving me and kicked me out. They were like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, that's not bad. The bad thing is I got canceled on TikTok. That hurt me.
Welcome to Imposters, the show where I talk to world-class execs, athletes, and entertainers about their personal challenges and how overcoming those challenges has shaped their careers and lives for the better. I'm your host, Alex Lieberman, co-founder and executive chairman of Morning Brew. My guest today is Zhaoying Summers. Zhaoying is a comedian, producer, and entrepreneur. She's best known for her comedy on TikTok, where she has over 1.1 million followers and over 300 million views. Zhaoying has a new 30-minute comedy special on Peacock TV, and she performs regularly at The Laugh Factory and The Comedy Store in LA. She is also the owner of the Hollywood Comedy Club and the Pasadena Comedy Club, where she produces shows that promote minority comedians. But Zhaoying's journey to comedy was incredibly difficult. As a child, she struggled to feel adequate in her home country of China, where she nearly died as the result of their infamous one-child policy. And midway through gaining career momentum in the U.S., she was suddenly confronted with both a divorce and being banned from TikTok, the platform that was fueling her livelihood. Zhaoying told me her story from the very beginning as an infant in China. Our conversation right after this quick break.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
A quick warning for listeners. This conversation does include a brief mention of suicide. If you or someone you know is struggling, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 800-273-8255. We've also included some resources in the show notes. Zhaoying Summers, thank you so much for joining Imposters.
Thank you so much. Such an honor to be here. And you pronounced my name perfectly. I really appreciate
it. Was it good?
Perfect. You should just learn Chinese.
Okay.
You'll be good at it.
I would love to learn. I've heard it's difficult. Okay. So I was thinking before the episode, you know, what is the best way to describe you, right? I could describe you as a comedian. I could describe you as an immigrant, as a survivor. And for people who are listening to this and they don't know your story, they're probably like, why are you potentially calling Zhaoying all these things? So I want you to start by telling your story from the beginning, from the very beginning.
Okay. So I was born in China in the 90s as a little girl with dark skin and big lips. And I was not wanted by my family, but my mother decided to keep me. But it was just a struggle growing up looking like me and being a girl. And everything I do, if it wasn't perfect, I always ask myself, you know, they kept me alive. Why don't I just do better? It was just such a hard time growing up. And then I realized I wasn't attractive in Chinese standard. It's that my skin's too dark, my lips are too big. So I wasn't popular in school and I don't look good in the girly dresses. And it just made me so angry. Then I realized that I can be popular by making people laugh. People like me more. Even though I wasn't a pretty girl, but I was always popular because I was trying to make people happy. And I remember when I was like 11 or 12, my cousin opened a video shop. She imports all the Hollywood movies. She sells it in our city in Henan province. And I realized that in the movies, they have women who's darker than me, but those women are the most beautiful women in the movie. And I just don't get it. What's wrong with my skin if those women are beautiful in America? And I feel like maybe there's something wrong with the society here. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something I need to learn. I need to see the world, see what's going on. And I decided that I want to grow up and to go to America. And I just want to see the other side of the world. If everything I've been told is the truth, is that the big lips is ugly and the dark skin is embarrassing as a woman. And that's why I decided to come to America.
Something that you said was, you know, my family didn't want me. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
They wanted to take me to the dumpster because I was not born with a penis.
And what does that mean, take you to the dumpster?
That was basically an unspoken rule. there's only one child is allowed. And if you had a girl, you just get rid of the girl. You can give the girl to relatives. You can put your girl to adoption. Then people don't know you had a baby. Therefore, you can have a chance to have another one. Hopefully, it's going to be a boy.
And is that something that your family wanted to do?
When I was a girl, my mom had to live a life is that she's going to have this girl. She'll never have a son. That's a life. It's very difficult for a woman who never bring a son to the world during that time. She has to make a decision that if she keep me, she still want to have a second baby. Therefore, she's going to lose her job, her house, her everything. And she decided to keep me and to have everything. Is that she's going to lose everything by keeping me, but she can have another baby. Hopefully, she have a son. And she didn't. She had another daughter.
If you weren't aware, in 1980, the Chinese government enacted a one-child policy that lasted until 2016. During this time, families were restricted to having one child per household, with few exceptions. And the government used things like financial incentives and preferential employment opportunities for those who complied with the policy. Now, on top of that, the government imposed financial and social sanctions against those who weren't compliant, like Zhao Ying's family, and they sometimes even forced abortions and sterilizations. But here's the craziest part. China had a centuries-old tradition of preferring sons in a family, as sons inherited the family name, property, and were ultimately responsible for caring for elderly family members. This led to tens of thousands of baby girls in China being given up for adoption, abandoned, and sometimes even becoming victims of infanticide. Thus, by deciding to keep Zhao Ying, and even later having a second daughter, Zhao Ying's parents were essentially giving up almost every opportunity for themselves.
How did your dad feel about all of this?
He is just like any other traditional Chinese father. But my father is an alcoholic, but he loves me a lot. And I think he loves me in his heart. He loves me even though I'm a girl, because I always make him laugh. And I think he was okay with my mom's decision. You know, he wasn't trying to be like, oh, we can't lose the house. My father said, it doesn't matter. If you want to keep her, we should keep our girl. We can have a new house. Or we don't have one. We just live under a small room, you know, at grandpa's house. It's going to be fine.
Wow.
So he was brave for even doing that. I know that's not something like you wish your father would do. Like, you would be like, oh, I'm going to keep my daughter. But, you know, he did better than other men.
Sounds like you had like a pretty freaking tough childhood.
Yeah, even you are alive, but you live under the burden of that you are not good enough. You know, you were supposed to be away or dead, but they kept you alive. If you can't get an A in all your classes while you're still alive.
Yeah.
It's so tough. I think it's very painful to know that. Everybody make jokes. They think it's funny. But I didn't think it was funny, because whenever I do something that wasn't perfect, I'll hear something from my relatives like, oh, you know that you were supposed to be given to somewhere else, but they kept you. Why can't you get an A+ in your class? It's tough. I think a lot of Chinese women, they don't talk about it because we feel like we are just so lucky to be kept alive. And if we have a B- in the class, we suck. We are not worthy of a life. And then we have to work harder to make sure we bring pride to our family. And when we get married, is that if the man is angry, we have to make sure they are not angry at us. We have to make sure that we are a good wife by being obedient. But in this society, women also go out to work. We are a full-time mom and a full-time person. So I want the women to know they were in my shoes. Even like the woman who didn't suffer the one-child policy, to know that we are doing the best we can. You know, the knowledge is so hard on me for knowing that I wasn't worthy to be alive, and they kept me alive. And if I'm not perfect, why don't I just die? But I can't die, because dying is a coward thing to do in my culture. You can't kill yourself. You have to fight. And it's very tough to talk about it. I want to cry. But don't talk about it. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I was a dumpster baby. Ha! But then I talk about it. I feel that I've been through a lot.
And so how, even today, sitting here, how have you been able to grow yourself in a way where you have more self-confidence, a better sense of self, belief in who you are, when basically your entire childhood was constructed in a way to make you do everything but believe in yourself?
I think coming to America is something that I will never regret. And I fought so hard to come here is because I can see me as a woman in front of other people's eyes, the people from different culture, different background, different skin color. I remember when I was in Kentucky, I had a...
And that's where you went to college, right?
Yeah, University of Kentucky in Lexington. I had a group of friends that they are from China. They are those girls who are the beautiful girls, very skinny, very pale, very tall, and they are from a wealthier family. So they are driving a Mercedes and I'm riding a bike. They are going to drive to the mall with their Mercedes. I'm taking the bike to the Japanese restaurant I'm waitressing at. And I remember that I was tutoring math class for a group of students. And sometimes our basketball team come. Kentucky basketball team. They are like a very popular. Yeah, yeah. I didn't have the knowledge of that they are very popular. But I did have friends from China asking me for their autographs. So one of those basketball players, I was tutoring him and his friend was there. Then we were like, we are going to celebrate because we won. Do you want to come over to our party? I'm like, me? He's like, yeah, what's your number? And then the girl next to me, the Chinese girl, the pretty one, the white, skinnier, taller, skinny, pretty one, she's like, I'm sorry, John, she's not pretty in China. Like, I'm the pretty one. You should be asking for a number.
She actually said that.
Yeah, because she's too dark to be pretty.
That is wild.
I'm like the Snow White princess. Like, I'm the pretty one. Like, are you confused? Because that's my number. The basketball player guy, he was just like, he was laughing. He was like amused. I was just like so hidden behind the shell.
Yeah.
So not confident. I wasn't even dare to ask people's name or like make friends. But I know they are like, I realize they are all stars. Like all my friends in China was like, saw them?
Yeah, yeah.
They're always like the top three team in the country. I know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They all like, but they were so sweet and nice. And then he's like, you know what, bitch, you're just jealous. Like, are you kidding me? She's too dark to be pretty. She's a pretty one, you're not. And that's what I heard. And that changed my life forever. Because I know that person, that guy, they are like very popular and they are the heroes for the basketball, for the team and everything.
Zhaoying says that this experience with the Kentucky basketball player standing up for her gave her a sense of confidence in her looks that she hadn't had before. And that confidence ultimately led her to learn that she could have a career in entertainment. And it started with a chance encounter with her friend at the time, Laura Kirkpatrick, who is on America's Next Top Model.
She needs somebody who can draw some butterfly on her face. And I was a painter when I was growing up. I like to paint. So I'm like, I can do it. Then she said, you should be a model. You are so beautiful. You have the best skin color and the perfect face. I'm like, no, I'm ugly. She said, it pays $200 for 2 hours photo. I said, I'm coming. And that's when I started just like posing for the camera. And I was taking acting class anyway because I love to perform.
Yeah.
I never knew I can do comedy. I knew I was always making people laugh. But Kentucky, I don't know what people say about Kentucky, but Kentucky is my second home.
Yeah.
It gave me confidence and I made friends. I can see people, white people, black people, Latina, they look at me just like, you are so beautiful.
Yeah.
And I believe this now because I lived the life in America, living my life in front of other people's eye. And I know they are not lying to me. They're just saying the fact.
You talk about how your experience at Kentucky and these players validating for you for the first time. And so like that was a huge moment for you, but I want to also pull back to comedy, how comedy and the act of telling jokes and making people laugh. It sounds like it started for you as very much like a coping mechanism to belong, right?
Yeah,
when you didn't feel like you could belong because of the way that you looked and how that was perceived in the country. But tell me the purpose that comedy has served in your life and how maybe that's changed or stayed the same over the course of, say, from childhood to where you are now.
I think a comedy saved my life many, many times. Since I was little, I think comedy make me face the world differently. I was not as inward as I should be, being not worthy of life. I was very outgoing because I know wherever I go, people give me the candy, they give me the food, and they hug me, and they like to see me. I didn't really have any real popular moment as a beautiful girl. You always want to be a beautiful girl. I feel like every girl wants to be a beautiful girl. And it's going to be a tough moment that you find out that you are not peaking. at a certain time that make you feel bad, but you are going to peak sometime. But I wasn't peaking when I was in China, because you can be popular, but the moment you like a boy and then they tell you something like this, it broke your heart. And
yeah,
it broke my heart so bad. I feel like I'm just going to go away. I'm just going to become somebody who's important, who has a platform, who can tell people that it's okay to look like this and feel beautiful. And I feel like giving me ambition, being rejected by love when I was in high school, gave me more ambition to know that I belong to a bigger place. So when I was in Kentucky, I became insecure again for not being able to speak the language. But it also like is a new plate for me. Nobody would know that I was not worthy to be alive. I can start fresh by building myself, making friends, learning English, and learning the culture. And then I realized that I want to perform. I never knew I can do comedy. You know, comedy is a thing. So I moved to California, starting to invest in my career in acting. I studied with Howard Fine. I started my whole craft for years and years with him. He was a wonderful mentor. And he told me I have a talent for comedy. He told me to watch more Goldie Hawn and Lucille Ball's things. Charming, funny, that kind of, he thinks that's what I am. And then I started to audition. I remember that I auditioned for John Singleton's movie called Rebel. It's a series called Rebel. There's a girl, is a Chinese American girl in Oakland. She has this Oakland accent. She's a like a gangster girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I auditioned and he liked me, but I remember at the audition room, I forgot something and I made a joke. And everybody laughed very hard. And then at the end he said, oh, sorry, I'm not going to take you because your accent is from China. We need a girl who's from Oakland. It's not going to be convincing. But I think you are very funny.
What did you feel when he said that?
I just feel expected because my accent never got me any acting job. I believe I'm a good actor. But it's the diversity, the writing. They don't have a role for a girl who is like, Salma Hayek has an accent. You know, she has a career. She has the role for her. You know, she made it for her. Like, she's an amazing actress. And she is okay for a Latina woman to have an accent because every Latina woman you know have some kind of accent. Even they have American accents. Sometimes they have accent reflect where they're from. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
But having a Chinese accent is, you know, the exotic masseuse lady gives happy ending. That's the Chinese accent. So I understand that he told me no, because they can't have an actress who's not famous, who's not convincing to be the girl they want to cast. But he said, you are very funny. You should try stand up. I said, thank you, but if you really like me, you would cast me. He said, no, I really like you. And that's why I'm telling you, you should try stand up. And this is my number. And call me if you did your first open mic. I never called him because I just felt that's like a no.
Yeah.
But then he sent me something. It's Ali Wong's clip. He said, this is so hilarious. When I was watching this, I think you could do something like this. You should try your open mic. Then I did. And I bombed so bad.
We're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, we get the full story of Zhao Ying's terrible first experience with stand-up and the pivotal moment of her getting kicked off of TikTok after her career started to take shape. We're back to my conversation with Zhao Ying Summers. Before the break, Zhao Ying explained how her failed audition for a series by director John Singleton led her to try her hand at stand-up. But as it goes for most comedians, her first experience at the mic was a shit show.
I couldn't even speak. I was frozen. And I feel like I was running over by a car. I was stuttering. I used to be stuttering when I was very young for a few years. But then I conquered it. So it went back to me. And I was trying to say a joke. It was only 2 minutes. I feel like 5 years. And I bombed. And I remember I was walking down the stage. I heard somebody saying, somebody should not be doing comedy.
What an asshole.
I went to my car because I just had my baby. I was pumping the milk in the car, crying. And then I had a vodka. I'm like, I'm pumping wet Russian right now. I'm going to drink my own milk. Just drink about, because I need some vet, like nutrition right now from this bad set. I was drinking. I'm thinking, I'm coming back. This is not okay. Next day, I found out all the open mic in LA. It's like 3 or 4. West Side Theater you know, the Hollywood improv is a lottery mic. I just did everything I can running around pumping milk in the car. And then I realized that it's the 10,000 hours rule to get better. And I remember before that, I was supposed to meet John Singleton for lunch. And the same week, you know, he asked me to have lunch to talk about my comedy. He died from this unexpected, I think, a brain aneurysm, something like that. And then I realized that life is so short. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go. If he believes in something in me, I should just try it. If I fail, at least I tried.
Yep.
But if I try something, I'll throw everything in. I start doing 10 hours a day. Like, not kidding. I've been doing 10 hours a day, either on stage or writing or performing or on TikTok, telling jokes to the audience since I decided I'm going to do this 2.5 years ago. So people always tell me, oh my God, you got so lucky. You get all the gigs. I said, I spend 10 hours a day on comedy.
While also having two children.
Yeah.
How are you able to do all of it?
I don't know. I feel like it's so difficult because I've always been bad mom shamed by my husband. He thinks I'm a bad mom for going out to comedy. It was very hard. Now, like, I'm getting a divorce. We filed a divorce. We've been separated for a while. And I realized that I allow the insecurities to control me, to let him to be right. I was not a bad mother.
Yeah,
I'm a great mom, you know. I'm doing the best I can. I'm setting an example to be a strong woman with a career. And my daughter would look at me and know that she can be on her own and she didn't have to rely on a man. I think I'm being a great mom. So I decided that if the marriage is going to end because I'm a bad person, it should end because I am a great person. I am my own hero. I'm doing the best I can. I'm not the best. I'm not perfect. But I have to fight very hard to have a platform. Therefore, my word can influence people to live less miserable years, to know today they are beautiful, they are confident, they can do anything they want. I never had that. And I almost let this taken away from me 5 years ago. Now I have it back. And it is more than ever, I'm going to keep pushing forward.
Well, it's amazing. And I give you so much credit because it feels, I don't know, in a weird way, kind of full circle, where as you were growing up, you didn't necessarily have the tools or the confidence, right, to tell people or believe in yourself that you were beautiful. And you were told that you should have been given away. And now you've gotten to a point where it's like, you went through a really difficult thing in life, which is, you know, being separated and having two children while trying to build up a whole career. It seems like for a while, you know, you were allowing what your husband was saying to get to you, to mm-hmm. invalidate your role as a mom. But it sounds like you really created a line in the sand where you stood up for what you stand for, that you have the belief that you are a great mom and also that you can be a great comedian as well. And it just, like, I don't know, it shows to me, I see amazing growth in getting to that place where you're able to stand for yourself.
Thank you so much. Because I have more sympathy towards women who are in a relationship or in any relationship. It doesn't matter the spouse or parent or friends that they tell you are not good enough and you allow that to happen to you. It happens to strong people because strong people want to be perfect and they love people around them. They don't want to disappoint them. So I always want to make sure I give all the love and I don't disappoint anybody. But life is disappointing. I can't have everything. I'm doing the best I can and I want to do the best I can. And I wanted to, even in my comedy, somebody think I'm too dark and mean, like I am either racist or sexist or whatever. I don't care because deep down I love everybody.
Yeah.
I love every culture. And my comedy, I'm a clown. My job is to make people laugh. My job is to address the issues, to say things people want to say, but they are afraid to say. I have this platform to say things. I did not come from China to LA to censor myself.
Yeah.
I have a stage finally. I'm just going to tell you how ridiculous the beauty standard is and how stupid it is. People just think, oh, you are shaming the white beautiful people in China because you are a bitter bitch. I'm like, no, they can be beautiful and white all they want, but they stop making fun of the dark people being ugly. That's what I want.
Even though Zhao Ying was resilient in facing her husband's criticism and ultimately their divorce, she did face another massive challenge. She got kicked off of TikTok, a platform that was acting as the lifeblood for her livelihood.
It's one of the worst time in my life that I moved out from my house. And that day was me driving from in a U-Haul to film my half-hour special for Peacock TV, which is going to be out May 1st. That day I was moving out. I didn't expect I'm going to get divorced that day. I was an emotional train wreck, but I didn't go home and cry, hiding in my closet. I drove there. I put on makeup. I went on stage and I did it with my swollen face and swollen eyes. And I did it. So I'm very proud that I did it, because if you think about this girl, almost got in the dumpster, and then she went to America, and she went to Kentucky, she went to LA, and then she is going to be on TV talking about everything. That's truth. Even though it wasn't ideal, I didn't look the way I wanted. I powered through it, and that's a part of life. And that's the same week I got canceled on TikTok. I always made the jokes like, as the, my husband stopped loving me and kicked me out. They were like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, oh, that's not bad. The bad thing is I got canceled on TikTok. That hurt me, because I don't need my husband, but I need my TikTok. It just happened, you know. That's probably going to be the darkest time of my life, is that I can move out from the house because I have the confidence I can afford my life. Because my TikTok, I have more over a million followers. I have brand deals. I can make a living. And no, I can't.
Do you have a sense of why it happened?
It is how dark my humors are. It's a lot of Asian comedians, they talk about being Asian. I talk about being Asian, but mine is not about being Asian growing up in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine is about being Asian growing up in China and coming here as immigrant. And the growing up in China, the story, that kind of humor, people never heard that before. It's a shock, the one-child policy. My one-child policy joke, it went viral. I think I did it in Austin.
What was the joke?
I remember the joke I would say is like, I was born in China in the 90s. There's the one child policy, aka penis only. So when I was born, my father found out my penis was missing. So he took me to the dumpster. But thank God he was drunk. So he dropped me on the ground. My mother heard me screaming and crying. She said, she's ugly, but she's a fighter. Let's keep her. Then I go... Meanwhile, all the other baby girls, they end up in the dumpster. They were taken by coyotes, hyenas, and Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh my God. That is incredible.
I think it's very dark for most people's taste.
It's very funny. And so it was one of the worst periods of time. So interestingly, because for a lot of people, divorce would be the worst time. Mm-hmm. But for you, you had built up a million follower audience for TikTok, which is less about, you know, caring about the followers or the likes, but more the fact that it was allowing you to accomplish two things. One is it was allowing you to accomplish using your platform to spread messages that people didn't feel comfortable spreading, mm-hmm. in a way that would get people to laugh and feel better in their day. And also it was like how you were able to be an independent woman, mm-hmm. making a living. Mm-hmm. And like both of those things were pulled from you.
Yeah, they are both pulled from me. And I think what really triggered for me to get canceled is that I start getting tens of thousands of comments threatening me to take down the video, some death threat, some threats of me being evil. And people just, I just keep talking about it. I made three or four more videos and boom, I was canceled.
Wow.
You'll no longer be able to come back to the platform. Everything's done. Then that was very dark. I cried for like, I think 4 hours. Then I decided that no, that is not the end of me. I'm going to bounce back from this. This cannot end me. I cannot be canceled in America by a Chinese company.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. Then I remember that journalist Nate Jackson, he covered my 30-minute special, a beautiful article talking about all Asian comedy special feature only Asian comedians. You know, he did a beautiful article. Then I realized he's going to visit one of my friend Aiden Park's show. Is a show benefit the AIDS Foundation. Mm-hmm. Because Aiden is a HIV plus comedian. He's one of my best friend. I asked Aiden, I want to go to your show. I don't want to talk to Nate. What would I do about this situation? Then I met the journalist and he was wonderful and he was very interested in talking about it. So we spent 2 or 3 months talking together, meeting together. He came to see my shows and he wrote this beautiful, beautiful article about me getting canceled and my life as a Chinese American immigrant comedian, having 2 clubs, how do I survive the pandemic and what happened. It was a beautiful piece. on LA Times Entertainment.
And you ultimately got back your account, right?
I got a lawyer, and then he talked to TikTok, and they get back to me.
And what did you, on the day or the moment that it was reinstated, what was the feeling? What was the thought that went through your head?
I feel like that's such a fight back that people try to silence me. I just fight back harder, just like what I knew to do, what to do. I'm ugly, I'm funny, I want to make people laugh. So I feel that's a moment for me to know that the truth, if you fight, if you have truth and good intention, you can win if you don't give up. That's how I felt the moment. I'm going to go further. This is one thing to prove me that I wasn't wrong. I'm going to go even further, from LA Times to Netflix, to all the TVs,
yeah,
and the clubs, and to reach out to more people to know that they are beautiful, they are worthy of everything. They can have anything they want in their life if they just go for it.
Well, I feel like, you know, if there's one through line in your life, it's you are just an incredible fighter, because everything that was put around you in your life was done so in a way to make you feel as little as possible, as ugly as possible, from, you know, the kids in school telling you that you weren't pretty enough, to you being part of China during a time when the one child policy existed. Like, there were so many different reasons in life for you to not feel good about yourself. And like, you've just continued to fight, right? Like fighting moving to America, then fighting going to Kentucky,
to LA,
then going to LA, you know, becoming a comedian after being told that because of your accent, you couldn't be an actor, but you could be funny, to ultimately now owning two comedy clubs and both being a business owner, mm-hmm, while also doing it around the work that you love. Like, yes, it's incredible.
I can book people that don't get on stage so often. I can book all women comedian, all black girls, all Asian girls, all like LGBTQ community. It's just that kind of shows that we need them so desperately, but not a lot of shows like that got put on. But
so you're saying those like comedians that are from minority groups are not put on as much in big comedy,
yeah,
clubs?
Yeah, they pick like a black girl, an Asian girl, an Asian man, and a gay guy to window dress like a show. Like a lot of like white people, then boom, a black guy,
yeah,
and a gay person. Ooh, that's a show, because they want to be right.
Right.
I'm like no, we're like, gonna have all gay girls, like all gay, yeah, all a lesbian show. Like, and then my show is crazy, but they all do well because people love to see them. We have Asian male lead show, all Asian men, and Asian female lead, and black girl magic, and all like a rainbow show, things like that, and all like Middle Eastern invasion,
yeah,
like all Middle Eastern comedians, things like that. I feel like being ugly, being not wanted, living through that kind of pain makes me a better comedian, because the best comedian is the comedian with compassion.
Yep.
You fight for the society. You don't make fun of the weak,
yeah,
and the poor. Because,
yeah,
I was the weak. I was the poor.
Well, your journey is incredibly admirable.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
It's been amazing. We're going to finish with a lightning round. So I'm going to ask you a few lightning questions. Sound good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the most embarrassing moment of your career?
My career? The most embarrassing? I would think that would be my open mic phase.
The first one?
The first open mics, the first week of open mics. It is bad. I know it's bad. Somebody slap me, come up and slap me. That's the only time Will Smith slap somebody is me on stage the first week.
Wait,
because
I
deserve it. I don't deserve the stage time. I'm not worth your people's time. It was bad.
Well, it's been uphill since then.
Yeah, I hope so.
Last question for you. If it wasn't me sitting here right now, but instead it was a child, Zhao Ying,
mm-hmm,
the Zhao Ying that was in China, who was bullied by kids in school, who didn't feel like they belonged, you could only say one thing to her. What would you say to her?
You can be anything you want.
Love it. Zhao Ying, thank you so much
thank
for joining
you.
The show.
Oh my, I have tears in my eye. I can't believe you make a comedian cry.
If anything can be said about Zhao Ying, it's that she is truly a fighter. Hearing her talk about almost being left in a dumpster by her father and enduring relentless bullying growing up, but still believing she could feel worth something, was so incredibly powerful. She knew from seeing American movies that in America, she might not have to feel ugly or made to believe that she wasn't worthy of life. So she found a way to get there. And then to struggle to find success in entertainment, which is already one of the hardest industries to succeed in, as an immigrant is even more impressive. And when that livelihood was almost taken away from her, she found a way to fight her way back onto one of social media's biggest platforms. If there's anything to learn from Zhao Ying's story, I think it's this. When we face deep challenges in life, we have two choices: give up or face our fears head on. Zhao Ying's lifelong choice for the latter is an amazing model for us all. Imposters is a production of Morning Brew. Our show is produced by Michaela Heck and Vishnu Vallabhaneni. Our executive producer is Brian Henry. Our booking producer is AB Silver. And our sound engineers are Dan Bauza and Rosemary Minkler. Our video producer is Emily Milliron. And Sarah Singer is our VP of Multimedia. Our theme song is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. Original music in this episode is by Rosemary Minkler.